Christian Parenting.
This is Be Love, Do Good Podcast, and I'm your host, Christy Hayes, mama to two, founder of Be Strong Story, and author of the children's book, The Lunchbox Note, a true story of how a lunchbox note that said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone, changed our life, and created a mission for our family. Join us each week for conversations that inspire our families to live out true compassion, kindness, and what it looks like to be love and do good in our communities. It may take us out of our comfort zones, you guys, but I promise it will put us on a path to see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Hey everyone, welcome to Be Love, Do Good Podcast. I'm your host, Christy Hayes. Today I have the most inspiring story. Ronnie Oliver is my guest today, and he spent 27 years in the Angola prison. And we talk about why, we talk about what he did, why he was there. His entire book that he wrote is called 27 Summers, My Journey to Freedom, Forgiveness, and Redemption During My Time in Angola Prison. And if you know anything about prisons, which many of us don't, but I have even heard about Angola Prison being one of the most dangerous and bloodiest prisons. And when he went there, he was still a kid. And so we talk very in depth about his story. And I would just warn those who maybe have kids or who have little ears in the car, there are some sensitive topics that we talk about. And so just wanted to let you know about just any trigger warning that you might have. And so it's a very raw interview. I'm so thankful that he came on to share. And I promise you will be inspired and just realize that God can redeem and restore anything. So please listen to my interview with Ronnie Oliver. Hey, Ronald, thanks so much for being with us here on Be Love, Do Good Podcast. I'm so interested for our listeners to hear your story and just this remarkable redemption story that you're going to tell us today. So thanks so much for spending your time with us today.
Yes, yes. So grateful to share with you. Well, my name is Ron Olivier. I come from New Orleans, a poverty-stricken neighborhood that was infested with drugs and violence. And so like any kid, you know, your greatest teacher is what you see rather than what somebody tells you. And so I grew up seeing drug dealers. First time I was 12 years old, I saw someone get killed. And not really realizing how that really impacted my life and traumatized me. And so I became a product of my environment. When I was about 16 years old, my father moved to Jacksonville, Florida. And that was a big part of my life. He was a very loving father, caring father, and I looked up to him. He was my role model. And I felt abandoned by him. And so consequently, I turned to the streets, and the streets began to father me. And I became what I saw. You'll read in my book, 27 Summers, I talk about it in depth, of all the things I experienced and went through. But that led me into Christmas Day of 1991. I find myself in an altercation with some guys that I had a prior altercation with. They saw me, and one thing led to another, and I shot two people. One of them I killed. And I was 16 years old. The guy that I killed was 14, and the other guy that I injured badly, he was like 18 or 19. And so that led me to prison. And so here it is. I'm in prison. You know, I've been in trouble as a juvenile before with little petty crimes, and used to my mother come and sign me out. And I was waiting for my mother to sign me out again.
You know, this was a whole different ball game.
Yes, the ma'am.
Tell me about that a little bit. We work with a lot of kids in juvenile detention centers, and I'm not saying that is a pretty place to be at all. But yeah, what was that feeling when you were like, wait, I am not in the juvenile detention center anymore. Right. I'm in a real prison.
So I was in the juvenile. So I'm waiting for my mother to sign me out. So I go to juvenile detention and go to court, and they end up charging me as an adult and transferring me to the adult prison, which I never knew. And kids never know that, you know, at the age of 15, you could be charged as an adult. And so here it is at 16, I'm transferred to the adult prison, and man, my whole life changed. So now as opposed to a juvenile facing juvenile life, which was to the age I was 21, I'm facing the death penalty now. And so I find myself on trial for first degree murder, and everything was really a joke up until the trial. You know, I just knew I was getting out. I was very optimistic. Everything's going to be all right, until the jury began to deliberate. And so they placed me in a holding tank. It's about 12 a.m., 1 o'clock in the morning. They placed me in a holding tank alone. And man, everything got real right there. And I began to realize that 12 people that didn't know anything about me, my life was in their hands. They was making a decision on whether I die or not. And so I was like, wow, man, I can really die. And that moment, I can remember my mother. Always had a praying mother, so encouraged parents to always pray no matter what. And so she always told me, she said, if you get in some trouble that I can't get you out, you make sure you call on Jesus. And right there in that cell, I got on my knees and I was actually crying tears, and I called out to Jesus. No one led me to a sinner's prayer. I didn't know anything about that. I had one simple prayer, and it was a deal I made with God. A lot of people say they don't make a deal with God. I made a deal with
him. You were desperate.
Yes. I say, Lord, if you don't let them kill me, I promise you I'll serve you the rest of my life. And, you know, hey, I'm here today. I'm still alive. And he held up his end, and I'm still trying to hold up my end. So the jury actually came back with a lesser verdict with second-degree murder, which carried a mandatory life sentence, which I didn't know about either. And so a lot of times kids are very ignorant of the law. They get into things that they have no idea of the consequences. Never think about the consequences, because you never think you're going to get caught. And here it is, man, I'm about to receive a mandatory life sentence, which in Louisiana means that you die in prison. There's no parole, no probation. You die in prison. And so, man, I could hear my mother in the background screaming. I never turned around. I could hear her wail, and I felt like I was dreaming. It didn't feel real to me. I was like in the daze.
I bet.
And I can remember later, considering suicide. Man, I need, because I'd rather be dead than to spend the rest of my life in prison.
Right.
But here it is. So right then and there, in that moment, in that holding tank, for the first time in my life, I experienced the peace of God. I'm talking about, I felt...
At 16 years old?
16. I'm 17 on trial.
Okay.
But I went to... I was arrested at the age of 16. So I'm 17.
So tell me, did you have any background of faith, or what was your relationship like with your mom? You said you had a loving father.
Right.
But then he left. Tell me a little bit about that.
And so I always spent the weekends with my father, holidays and the summers. Come from a broken home, but he was always there, always present. Every time he said he was coming to get me, he never stood me up. And if I went by his house on the weekends, you were sure to go to church Sunday. You know, that was an optional. And even my mother was Catholic, my father was Baptist, so I was a Baptolick. You know? And so I always had some knowledge of God, you know. That background really helped me. The Bible talks about training up a child in the way that he should go. And when they're old, I think that's the part we miss. When they're old, they won't depart away from it, you know. And so you got to give it some time. And so there I was having this experience the peace of God for the first time. I felt comfortable in this most uncomfortable situation.
Yeah,
that's I couldn't explain it, but I felt like I was gonna be okay. And so, fast forward a little, I end up in Angola, which is Louisiana State Penitentiary, the worst prison in the nation.
I even know what that one is. That's a rough. Yeah.
Yes, it was labeled as the bloodiest prison in the nation.
Did you know that before you went in there?
I heard stories of it. Yes. So you always hear stories of it, especially going through the process of going through the jails and, you know, the other prisons. And so you hear about it. And so I'm like, man, I know one of the things that they did a lot, they preyed upon the young to actually rape them. And so my mind was set that, man, I'm a die here because I'm not going to be someone's girlfriend. Yeah. I'm going to either kill someone or I'm going to die here. But I'm going to protect my manhood at all times. And so that was my mindset. So I go there and amazingly, here's God. Man, he's orchestrating this whole thing. He surrounds me around people that's willing to help me and not hurt me. Mm. Although danger was all around me, oh man, it didn't come near me. I only saw it with my eyes, just like the scriptures in Psalms 91. I only beheld it with my eyes. He was protecting me. And man, there was men that was helping to disciple me, you know, because after I had that experience, you know, I experienced the peace of God, and I still was doing some of the same things, still talking the same way, but the difference was I was feeling bad about it. I was being convicted.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand what was going on there, you know, and that I had to renew my mind. I had to go through that process. And God sent me around some brothers that was helping disciple me and push me in directions of ministry and sharing my faith. And before you know it, I found myself in a Bible college there. They had a Bible college there, established there, an extension center, New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, where you can earn up to a bachelor's degree. Right now you can get a master's. There's a master's program. But so I got in a Bible college, and man, that just excelled me. Before you know it, I was in ministry. And also the prison was, after you graduate from Bible college, you have the opportunity to be a missionary. Picture that, being a missionary in prison.
Yeah, what does that look
insane.
Like?
This is strictly a God idea. And so here's Angola is the penitentiary. It's like the main penitentiary, Louisiana penitentiary. Then there are other satellite camps and other different parts of the state. You know, so the Bible College was sending out missionaries to assist chaplains in other prisons. And so I end up going to a prison in Cottonport in Avoyelles parish, and end up assisting the chaplain there and pastoring the church there, which was amazing. And
how old were you at the time?
At that time, I'm probably in my 30s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've had some years right. in prison. Like, did you think you were ever going to get out? I mean, did you even think about it?
Somehow I always had that innate resolve that I was not going to die in Angola. I didn't know how I was going to get out. I didn't know when, but I knew who. And I trusted the who, and the who took care of the how and the when. And there were moments of doubt that just like Abraham, I liken to Abraham, how God gave him a promise, and day-to-day life caused that promise to leak. And he started depending on himself, trying to do it himself in other ways, you know, and God will bring him back to the promise. And so God will always remind me, and in those times when I had those doubtful moments, I always took it to God in prayer. You know, I let him know how I'm feeling. Look, just show me again. Tell me again. And he always reassured me that I was not going to die in prison. I can remember one time I was on my bunk, and I'm lying there, and I'm really, really down. I'm like, man, this can't happen like this. I've been here, been in prison since 16. I haven't really lived a life. This can't be the end for me, God. What's going on? You know, and man, and I had just come from being denied from the United States Supreme Court. You know, and so that exhausted all my state remedies. That put a stamp of approval on my life sentence that you absolutely going to die here.
Like no more chances. You've done chances. All your trials, all your
That's
appeals,
it.
All
my
things.
Appeals, okay. Everything. Oh, and I'm like, man, Lord, what's going on? And so I never forget. I get on my knees and I have like an open vision. No, excuse me. I was lying on my bunk and I had like an open vision. It was like the first time this ever happened. My eyes are open, but the whole scene changed. And I'm picturing when my dad was coming get me on the weekend. It came back to me so clear. I was about 10, 11 years old, and it's a Friday, and after school, I had my book bag, go get my clothes, and sitting right there, and I'm waiting on my dad to come pick me up. And so I falls asleep there. My mother wakes me up. She said, baby, won't you go to sleep? Your daddy may not be coming today. He must not be coming. I said, he called and told you that? She said, no, but it's getting late. I said, if he hadn't called you and told you that, he coming, you know. And about 5 minutes later, he rang the doorbell. And I come in, I jump in his arms. And I hear the Lord say this here. He said, if your earthly father being evil didn't forget you, how much more than your heavenly father? He said, I will not forget you. He said, daddy, come and get you. And man, that was a time of, I always reflected back on that when I get down. And so I always said that. I had that in my heart and I put it in my mouth, you know, and shared it and encouraged others with it. And man, so consequently, later, which was amazing because there was absolutely no light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, you were going to be stuck in there forever. Like, had you just kind of said, right, like in your head, like, okay, this is just going to be my life, so I better make the best of it.
Yeah, and so I was like, I had came to the point where no matter what, I was going to serve God, whether I get out or not. Mm. I said, man, look, for you I live, for you I die, no matter where I am. And I'm going to do ministry wherever I am because it's not something I do. It's who I am, you know.
That's good.
And so I began to help people wherever I was. And there was no light at the end of the tunnel, but there was a light in the tunnel. And that's what I embraced, the light in the tunnel. And, man, 2012, Miller versus Alabama, the United States Supreme Court came back with a ruling that said it was unconstitutional to give a juvenile a mandatory life sentence. Said it violated our Eighth Amendment of cruel and unusual punishment, and that children are more likely to be rehabilitated than adults because of the frontal lobe of their brain is not fully developed. And that's the part of the brain that helps you appreciate risk and consequences. You know, that's why kids do crazy things, you know. And so they ruled that we should have opportunity for it to be re-sentenced. And so here it is. I go back and forth to get re-sentenced. And here it is. I for years, above me going home, there was something first on my list that was to meet the guy who I had killed, his mother. You know, because out of everybody in the courtroom, I can't remember how my lawyer looked. Can't remember how the DA looked. vaguely remember the judge, but her face burned. I'm talking about it was branded in my mind. I remember her getting on the stand and crying about her son. And so after I got born again and really developed a prayer life, she was first on my list. I prayed for her more than I prayed for anybody. And I always had the desire to want to meet her and possibly, you know, be forgiven at most, but at best just to share with her that I was sorry, you know, no matter what the outcome was. And so here it is. I'm getting this opportunity in court. I meet with her and I never forget. I was handcuffed and shackled in an orange jumpsuit. I had to kind of turn around to talk to her. The DA was sitting next to her. The judge had approved for us to talk to each other, and she was willing. And I never forget when she came over. She was like this. I was very nervous and emotional.
And this was how many years after? I mean, how many years after this had happened?
About 24 years. I said, ma'am, I said, first of all, I said, I want to let you know, I said, I take full responsibility of the death of your son. And when I said that, her arms unfolded and she leaned into me, you know. It was almost like she was waiting for some story to come, you know, and she leaned into me. I said, I just asked, all I ask that you forgive me. You know, I said, it was a senseless death. Your son shouldn't have died. It was a very stupid decision that I made. I said, I'm very, very sorry for it. I said, and I pray, you know, you can find it in your heart to forgive me. And she said, I don't hate you. She said, and I forgive you. And man, when she said that, it was almost like the handcuffs and the shackles came off of me. By this time, both of us are crying. I'm talking about just the hardest conversation I ever had to have with a person, you know. And she told me, she said, what I didn't know was that, you know, when my son died, that he had a son. She said, I end up raising him. She said, he's like 18 years old now. She said, I wanted to bring him here today to meet you. He said, he forgive you. She said, all my family forgive you. I said, whoa. And I said, man, if I ever get out, you know, I still love to meet him. And she said this here. She said, not if you get out. She said, when you get out.
Wow. The power of forgiveness, right?
Oh man, it was so amazing. Look, at that moment, I didn't care what happens in the courtroom. I was free right there. And it was like, man. And so they come back with, re-sentence me with life with the eligibility of parole that I could have an opportunity to go home. And so everybody clapping. And so I was the last case there. So everybody going out of the courtroom. And my little niece was the last one I had family support there. She was the last one leaving out waving. And the judge said, Mr. Olivier, you can visit with your family. So I told her, y'all come back, you know. And the lady pushed past my family to get to me first.
Oh, wow.
And she told me, she said, man, I'm happy for you. She said, you deserve a second chance, you know. And she said, just don't go out there and pick up that gun again. I said, I promise you, ma'am, I won't.
I won't.
I said, I promise you. And so I get re-sentenced 6 years later. I go on the parole board. Louisiana was fighting what the United States Supreme Court said. So they came back with a ruling Louisiana Supreme Court saying that it was retroactive. That Miller versus Alabama only applied to 2012 and up.
Okay.
Now it didn't go backwards.
Okay.
And so I'm like, oh man. And so that's what took the process long for me to get some relief. And went on the board. It was powerful. Oh man. I could sense the presence of God when I went on the board. I'm talking about, I was so nervous, but when I stepped across the threshold of the parole board, hearing that door, that threshold, I instantly felt the presence of God. A peace came over me that assured me that I was okay, and all the nervousness left. And amazingly, they ruled. They was laughing. They congratulated me, and man, I went home.
Wow. How many years? 27 years you were in
27
prison.
Years.
27 years. Hope you enjoyed my interview with Ronnie Oliver. I was so inspired by this conversation. We talked even more afterwards. And one of the things that we talked about is just the importance of this father figure that he said in one of his stories that there was a kid that came from the same environment as him, but he went a different path. He actually went into the NFL. He was a football player, but he had a coach in his life that spoke into him. And we talked so much about why it's so important to speak into the lives of kids. And of course, our kids, but that we find someone who might need a mentor, who might need a voice for them, who can come alongside them and just love on them, show them compassion, show them another way. And I just encourage you to be looking. We always say eyes wide, light shine in our family, to be looking for those that you can pour into, looking for those that you can invite to your table who might not have a table of their own. I hope you enjoy this interview. I hope it sticks with you, and I hope you get his book, 27 Summers, which you can get anywhere now, anywhere you like to get books. Thanks so much for being love and doing good in your families and your communities. We will see you next week.